Let's begin. I think today will be interesting nonetheless. And so to start out, really the question becomes, what's the most important lesson in Judaism? And this is actually a discussion that takes place. But before we sort of discuss more of an official source from an authoritative state of personality, I'm curious what people think. What do people have to say? Whether Peter, Sarah, whomever is brave enough, what's one of the most important lessons that Judaism has to offer?
Compassion.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Any other thoughts about what Judaism might have to offer? The most important. All right, we'll roll with compassion. So the discussion, this is actually a sort of an interesting source. Oftentimes in books, it doesn't happen in like novels, but oftentimes in scholarly works, the introductions are very elaborate. You could get a whole degree. A professor of mine said that he officially got his degree in medieval literature, but he said he really felt like his degree is in introductions, because they used to just read the introductions of all of these tremendous works. When you read introductions, you get an idea of who the person is, what they're sort of aiming at. They'll tell you sort of what their mission is in their writing. And so in the introduction of a book called The Ein Yaakov, he cites what he calls a famous debate amongst the sages. What's interesting about this is almost like a phantom debate, because no one knows where it is. People have looked and looked and looked, and no one can actually find the exact source. So I'm not going to suggest that he made it up, but he seems to think it's there, and no one else thinks it's there. So we're about to hear maybe a phantom source of sorts. But it's shrouded in mystery. And the phrasing is not exactly as I posed it of what's the most important lesson, but it's what's the most important verse throughout all of our literature. And it's really presenting the same idea. And the first suggestion is exactly what Peter said. Sorry, not exactly, but close enough. And you know, if we were to put compassion into the framing of a verse, of a line, I think it's fair to suggest that love thy neighbor as thyself is fair. Peter, would you agree? All right, I'm getting nods. Wonderful.
Yes.
So what's one suggestion? What's the first suggestion of the most important verse in the entire Torah? Love thy neighbor as thyself. And in fact, when a potential convert came to the Rabbi Hillel to convert, he actually told him the first and most important thing you need to know is love thy neighbor. Great. But maybe that's not the most important verse. Maybe the most important verse is actually the Shema. The Shema, which Jewish people have been saying for years, for generations. It's what we say at night before we go to sleep. It's unfortunately what people have said on their deathbeds, or God forbid, in worse situations. I guess this makes sense, because if we contrast it, love thy neighbor is sort of the epitome of an appreciation and a respect of one another, of compassion between one person and their fellow man, whereas Shema is the article of our faith. Shema is proclaiming what we believe. Shema is the ideal, the ultimate, in our relationship with the divine. And so when we talk about the two most important lessons of Judaism, seemingly it would make sense. The ideal, the paradigm of our relationship between people, and the ideal paradigm in the relationship between one another. However, there's one more suggestion made that seemingly might not fit. It's an obscure verse. It happens to be the verse that we're reading in this week's Torah portion. Shocking. And the verse is not quite as exciting, not quite as well known. The verse goes as follows. In the morning, you shall offer the morning sacrifice. In the afternoon or evening, you should offer the afternoon-evening sacrifice. That's it. No article of faith, no paradigm of character. It doesn't even seem to describe an action. It doesn't even seem to describe something that has to do with me. It's talking about, you know, an archaic service in the temple. And yet, when I have the options of the daily morning and afternoon offering in the temple, the paradigm of our belief in God in the Shema, and the paradigm of our connection with other people in love thy neighbor, what do you think wins? Shockingly, the daily offering wins.
Oh, the daily offering.
Who would have guessed? suggest that the daily offering should be the one that wins? That you're supposed to offer a bring a sacrifice in the morning and the afternoon in the temple? Why is that the most important lesson in the entire Torah and for all the Jewish people? So that's what we're going to try and understand today. Why would a daily offering, why would the consistency, if you will, of a daily offering be the most important lesson for us in our connection to our Jewish lives? We're going to suggest three things, although sometimes I get carried away and three turns into four. So forgive me if that happens. I guess we'll open with a story. Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky has been an addiction counselor in Milwaukee for like 50 years. Pittsburgh, sorry, for like 50 years. He was educated in Milwaukee, but he's been living in Pittsburgh. And he tells a story about a man named John. Shocked. And John was an addict, and he wound up in Dr. Twersky's clinic. And so Dr. Twersky, you know, every day would say, "Oh, hi, John. How you doing? What's going on?" And John, every single day, would say the same line. Every time he saw Dr. Twersky, he would say, "Having a good day today. John, how you doing? Having a good day today." Whether it was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, New Year's, 4th of July, hot as it could be or cold as it could be, every single day, John's answer was always, "Having a good day today." And eventually, John left the clinic and John went home. John lived out a nice life, and he passed away. And as John's family is going through his belongings, they see that there's a notebook that says today. It says today on it. And they open up the notebook, and they're looking through, and they're seeing that there's just a date. One date. Yeah. September 9th. July 9th. July 10th. July 11th. July 12th. And lists every single day, each and every day, from the first day that John was in that rehab clinic, listing daily. What they came to understand is that John looked at his life. John looked at his attempt to conquer addiction as a daily effort. The goal was not to worry about what's going on in the future. The goal was not to think about, all right, you know, I've been clean now for 5 years. I've been clean now for 10 years. John looked at himself and said, "Today I'm clean. Today I'm doing well. Today I have goals that I want to accomplish, and I'm succeeding. And tomorrow, the only thing I need to worry about is just today." And so when we think about the magnitude of goals, sometimes if we think about even with these ideals, the magnitude of loving thy neighbor or of the Shema, of what is the most important thing in Judaism? It's not one thing or two things. It's about taking everything, taking every experience that we have day by day by day. And so Rabbi Dr. Twersky learned that from his student, from one of his patients. But there's, this is another story told in the Talmud in Masechet Megillah, and you can imagine the scene. There's an elderly sage sitting at his deathbed. He's laying there, and he's surrounded by his students. And they say, "Rabbi, our dear teacher, you've lived such a long life, and now it's come to an end, but you've lived such a long life. How did you merit to live so long?" And so you can imagine, you know, things that they're expecting. And maybe he's going to say, "Oh, you know, I always went for a walk after dinner," or, you know, "I stayed away from carbs," or, you know, maybe a glass of wine every night, whatever a medical advice might be. But they weren't really asking for medical advice. They weren't asking their teacher, you know, "What health tips do you have for us?" They were asking, "Is there some sort of spiritual practice that we could perform that would help us merit, that would give us the opportunity to have a long life?" And actually, the whole page of the Talmud goes on to list a number of different examples of different rabbis who shared their answers to how they merit a long life. And so I'll just list off a couple of them. Never cut through. So he says, "In all my days, I never cut through a synagogue. I never cut through a sanctuary," as if to say, "I never defiled, you know, a place of holiness. I always treated it with the utmost respect." And he says, never in my days have I ever stepped over someone, somebody. And you can imagine stepping over someone, you know, even though, you know, I guess, you know, if you're in camp, if you're at an outdoor movie, it happens from time to time. But if you don't step over someone, you're appreciating that, you know, this person is of value. I'm not going to just walk over them. Interestingly, and I'm actually only noticing this right now, he seems to sort of create the paradigm we had before. That devotion to holiness, to godliness, and that, you know, devotion and commitment to other people. And then we have another answer. And he says, oh, the reason why I lived so long, nobody ever got to the house of study before me. I was always the first one there and the last one to leave. And another one says, I always forgave people before I went to sleep. And another one says that I was always the first one to say hello to somebody else when walking in the street. Tangentially, if you will, there was once a conversation between Elijah the prophet and a certain man. And Elijah the prophet has sort of an insight into the Jewish people. You know, he visits us at the Passover Seder. He's whenever there's a circumcision, and so he sort of has an inside scoop as to what's going on. And so someone says, you know, we're out in the street here. We're at the market. Is there anyone here who is sort of guaranteed a spot in heaven? And Elijah looks around and he says, those two guys right over there. And the guy looks and he's like, they're clowns. How come there are, what do you mean clowns? How can clowns be the ones who are guaranteed a spot in heaven? And Elijah the prophet explained that if someone can bring smile to someone's face, to someone else, that person is worthy of a spot in heaven. And so oftentimes when we think about sort of what's worthy, what's not worthy, maybe we'll be a little surprised. But anyway, sorry, I digress. You know, why is somebody worthy of living a long life? We listed off a bunch of things. In all my days, I never took a shortcut. In all my days, I always said hi to people. In all my days, I always forgave people before I went to sleep. In all my days, I was always the first one in and the last one to leave. How are all these different things contributing to a long life? Why are all these different sages have different answers? So I heard so beautifully yesterday, actually, that the answer is not because I did action X, did action Y, action Z. The key to the long life is not that you did certain positive action. It's that you did any positive action, whatever you were committed to, every single day. On a daily basis, you were committed to this value, and that's what sort of led you forward. That's what took you. That's what enabled you to live a long life, because your life was full of meaning. And actually, I did a little bit of research, and admittedly, it's not the most robust research out there. I have a degree in psychology, although I basically just use it to quote psychological studies. And admittedly, it's not such a formidable source. It's a health website that I was able to find. But among the 10 health advice that they offer, number 6 is that you just stop thinking about big changes. Don't worry about, you know, the big impact of everything you're doing. Don't think, oh, you know what? God forbid, I have a heart condition, or I just found out that I have cholesterol, or I was diagnosed with diabetes, or whatever health ailment I've encountered. Don't think long term. Don't think that I need to upend my entire life. Take it one day at a time. Again, that value of consistency. And so the first, and this admittedly probably a little more robust than the others, the first appreciation for why consistency is so important is because consistency is what gives you life. It's what extends your life. It's because when you have consistency, you're able to accomplish whatever goals you set forth. And that, I guess, sort of leads us into our second lesson. I had a teacher who used to like to say that if you start something and you never stop, you'll eventually finish. And that almost sounds like a Yogi Berra kind of line. I don't imagine I'm dating myself. I don't know if that means anything. There's dating yourself, and then there's letting Chicagoans know that you're not a native. And that's probably even a little bit riskier than dating yourself. So I am a born and raised New Yorker, although thank God we're very happy in Chicago. But thank God. For a long time, it was easy to be a Cubs fan because you just kind of like felt bad. Now that the Cubs are actually good, it's like a little different. But Yogi Berra had all these like sort of like cute little lines that didn't make any sense. You know, if you find a fork in the road, pick it up. Great, thank you, Yogi Berra. but my teacher used to say, if you start something and never stop, you'll eventually finish. Well, yeah, of course, if you start something and never stop, you'll eventually finish. That's how it works. However, if we think back I can think back at my personal life experience. There have been so many times when I've started something and just been overwhelmed by the magnitude of the job, or just thought, I'm never going to be able to do this well, and I gave up. Because if we focus on the end game without focus on the ideal, as opposed to focusing on what's in front of us, we're not going to succeed. We're not going to be able to do it. But if you just stick with what's in front of you, whether that's a daily effort, whether it's starting something and just refusing to stop, whether you do one a day of whatever you want to accomplish. There's an author named A.J. Jacobs. I think he's a New York Times writer, but he's written a number of books. And he wrote a book, this is how I found him, he wrote a book called A Year of Living Biblically. And he spent a long time studying the direct text of the Bible and then lived it quite literally. Hilarity ensues. It's a fun read. I highly recommend it. He's got a few TED Talks about the lessons he learned. But that's not what we're talking about. His first book, he approached his editor and said, I want to read through the entire Encyclopedia Britannica. And he said that, his father growing up had always said that this is so important and everyone has to have read it in their lifetime. And so he decides, I'm going to do it. And he tried a few times and he never succeeded. I think at some point, maybe in college, he got up to G, but he gave up. So he decided, no, I'm going to do this and I'm not going to stop. And so he created a memoir almost of the life experience he had while reading through the entirety of this encyclopedia. And one of the lessons he learned was that if you just stick to it and you refuse to give up, you will eventually read through the entirety of the encyclopedia. But that's only if you're able to look in the here and now. It's only if you're able to focus on today. And that might give us another explanation as to why, when we think about these three ideals of our devotion to God and the Shema, our devotion to other people in love thy neighbor, consistency might actually be the most important. And this last one I find, I guess, sort of the most compelling, if you will. I read back that verse in the beginning of the consistency line. We have love thy neighbor, that's a direct verse, the Shema, hear Israel, God is one. And then the consistency line, which is surprising, was that in the morning you should offer, the morning offering, and in the afternoon you should offer the daily afternoon offering. And we paraphrase that, that's the daily offering in the temple, that's the lesson of consistency and continuity throughout. But if we pay attention to the specific language, that line is telling us that in the morning we should do something, and in the afternoon we should do the same thing. And how many times are there people, whether it's ourselves, obviously ourselves, I have a friend, we all have a lot of friends who've made a lot of mistakes and have lots of questions that we obviously don't have. But we have friends, we know people who are inconsistent in their lives, that you maybe at the workplace they act one way, and at home they act a different way. When they're with their friends, they're a little bit more relaxed. When they're in public, they're not. I don't know how many of us are connected, but the big thing this past week is that Disney Plus, one of the streaming services, now has the Hamilton Broadway show available for seeing. I'm seeing a lot of smiles. Naturally, we have to watch it. And so putting aside the fact that Lin-Manuel Miranda is one from Washington Heights, where I lived, but more importantly, a musical genius and astounding, the story of Alexander Hamilton is fascinating. And my mom asked me what I thought after I watched it, and I said, I like the first half more than I like the second half. So, am I allowed to spoil it? There's usually like a statute of limitations on spoiling stories. Like when Harry Potter was coming out, like you had like 2 months of being expected to read it. It's been almost a week, but then again, Hamilton died over 200 years ago. So I don't know if that counts as ruining the story, if this is just history that you could have known otherwise. So if I have everyone's permission, I'll ruin the second half of the play.
He had slaves? Is that the idea?
So there's been a scandal lately about having slaves, and and so that I'm smart enough not to talk about at the moment. Maybe we can have offline we can talk if you'd like. But there's a scandal that takes place in the actual play is that Hamilton, who's this incredible thinker and leader and wants to build up the country, has an affair. and it's a big scandal, and eventually comes out, and he confesses to it. He writes he actually writes the Reynolds pamphlet and details all of it, which is an unusual thing to do, but that's what Hamilton did. And what was so striking, what's so terrible about that? You have to wonder, for a moment, if we can be insensitive. If someone has an affair, in what way, shape, or form does that impact their ability to form the... to function in the federal government? Why should...
Bill Clinton's an example.
So, we could likely bring a lot, and I'm not making any arguments or suggestions in any way, shape, or form. But when we think about it, if I found out that a certain scientist, or my doctor even, was having an affair, would I stop going to the doctor? I don't know. But part of the challenge, part of the scandal within the Hamilton story, and with, you know, anytime things like this come up, is that that there's the external... the external presence, the external portrayal of this person is that they're an upstanding citizen, that they're committed to all these various values. My doctor is not necessarily committed to... I don't necessarily care, and my doctor doesn't walk in and say, Hi, I'm Dr. So-and-so, I just want to let you know, I'm happily married. I don't care if the doctor's married or not. But when a politician gets up and says, I am X, Y, and Z, and then doesn't live up to it, it's much harder for us. We have a very big issue with when people are inconsistent. We expect consistency, and if you've created a persona of yourself that you hold a certain standard, then we expect that of you. And maybe one of the lessons from this idea of consistency is not consistency over time. We've talked about it in sequence over a long period and sustaining and holding out. But maybe there's also consistency in the way that we act, you know, on an individual day and in our lives. Am I consistent in the way that I talk to my children? And the way that I talk to my employees? Am I consistent in the way that I talk to my parents or my boss and the way that I talk to other people? And maybe the lesson here is that we should be consistent throughout. That think about the sort of the best version of ourselves. And for some of us, the best version of ourselves is when we're talking to our parents. For some of us, the worst version of ourselves is when we're talking to our parents. But when we think about the best version of who I am, the lesson is we want to be consistent in that person. That person should be visible to everyone. Everyone should see that. And maybe we'll add one other piece to it about this morning and afternoon idea. Maybe the lesson of morning afternoon isn't even in the consistency. I guess we'll call this a fourth idea. But it's about bookends. Because the very first thing that you would do when the temple started, the first, you know, order of business was to bring this morning offering. And the very last order of business at the end of the day was to bring this daily offering. And so the daily offering bookended. It was the opening and closing scene of the temple service. And maybe there's an idea in consistency there, that our morning and our evening should be committed to an ideal. That, you know, throughout our day, things come up. And we've got to take care of things that we might not necessarily be passionate about, we might not necessarily care about, and that's okay, that's understandable, that's part of the human condition. But what if every morning and every night we could do something that we really feel passionately about? What if I could start my day fired up because I'm doing something that really matters to me, and I could end my day excited because I'm doing something that really matters? And throughout the day, maybe things will be great, maybe they won't. Maybe I'll be able to do things I want to do. Maybe I'll do things that I don't necessarily want to do. I just went grocery shopping, which is, like, nice, and I'm glad that I was able to do it. And thank God I'm able to pay for it, and I'm able to go out, and they had all the food that we needed. We didn't always have all the food accessible. But I don't feel fired up. I don't feel like, you know, I'm maximizing my life when I'm walking around the grocery store. But maybe I can find something to do. Maybe, like, coming together for a noontime nosh. Is that right? Okay. Maybe that, to find something that where I'm really passionate, and that every single day should be a day where you're committed, where you're passionate, where you bookend your day with something that you really, really care about, that you're really excited about. And so to recap, the question we wanted to understand was what's the most important lesson, and more specifically, what's the most important verse in all of Judaism? And we suggested that maybe it was compassion, as Peter said, to love thy neighbor. And that was one option. Another option was that it was the Shema. It was that declaration of connection to God. and we have that commitment to other people, the commitment to God, and yet, our number three example, our number three option of the daily offering in the temple somehow wins, and that becomes the most important lesson in all of Jewish experience. And we explained three reasons why. We said that first and foremost, that sometimes a task might be too big for us to fathom, and so if we take it one day at a time, slowly and consistently, then we'll be able to live up to our goal. We'll be able to accomplish it, and something that might have seemed out of reach is now no longer out of reach. And then similarly, we said that if you want to accomplish a goal, consistency is the only way to get there. You're never going to be able to reach that goal unless you go little by little. And so maybe the most important lesson actually is loving thy neighbor or commitment to God in the Shema. But you're never going to be able to arrive at either one of those two goals unless you have the consistency leading you along. The medium is the message in this case. And finally, we suggested that the consistency is not necessarily over the course of time, but in a single day. And maybe in some parts of my life, and some people that I spend time with, I am in the paradigm of loving thy neighbor or of commitment to the divine. But if that's not consistent throughout my day, then what value is it? We need to have consistency, and then all of the other pieces of it will fit in. And then finally, we said that on a daily basis, we should be doing something, whether it's morning and evening, or whether it's just at least once during the day, a daily offering. Every single day, we should be able to do something that we care a lot about, that we're passionate about. And so, thank you so much for learning. I'm happy to stick around and hang out for a little bit, but I appreciate you giving me the chance to sort of share some thoughts on something that I'm passionate about.
Thank you.
Thank you so very, very much.
You still a Yankees fan?
I am still.